I don't want to blame nobody. It starts with me. I think we just played real soft. We cannot play just let teams come in here and beat us like that.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast, brought to you by Basketball Monster. And today's Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast is also brought to you by Blue Apron. Go to blueapron.com/LOFB to get your first meal free. My name is Josh Lloyd, and as always, you can find me on Twitter at redrock_bball. As usual, the Monday podcast is always chock full of goodies. We're going to be looking at Sunday's games. We're going to be previewing the 11 game Monday we've got. We're going to be looking at the week ahead for weekly leagues, for daily leagues, and we're going to be covering over any information that we missed across the weekend as well. So of course,
Let's get to it indeed.
We will start off by looking at the week ahead, and that is week 8 in the NBA. We've got an interesting week with some definite streamability for daily changes leagues on certain days. Let's look how it all breaks down. On Monday, we've got 11 games, as I said. So adding someone for Monday, you're probably not going to be able to fit them into your active roster. But on Tuesday, that's when the goodness starts. There's 3 games on Tuesday, so there's definitely an ability for you to stream someone in on that day. Wednesday, we're back to 10, so that's a tough schedule day. And Thursday, we've got 4. So ideally, we're looking at streaming in Tuesday, Thursday, and then there's a couple more days at the end of the week. Friday has 8 games, Saturday has 10 games, and Sunday has 6. So we're targeting really 4 days of the week. Tuesday with 3 games, Thursday with 4 games, Friday with 8 games, and Sunday with 6 games. And that gives us a few back-to-backs and pseudo-back-to-backs to have a look at if we have matchup acquisition limits for the week. So the first one we want to look at there is the Tuesday-Thursday pseudo-back-to-back. And if you are new to the podcast, a pseudo-back-to-back is basically for streaming purposes. If you add someone on Tuesday, you won't need to necessarily drop them for Wednesday because they can most likely sit on your bench because you'll almost definitely, well, not almost definitely, but most likely have a full complement of active players with 10 games and 20 teams in action on Wednesday. So if you can add someone on Tuesday and you find that player from that team plays the Tuesday-Thursday back-to-back, then you can add that guy, get 2 games for the price of 1 acquisition. We've got Thursday, Friday, which is a back-to-back opportunity, and then we've got a Friday, Sunday pseudo back-to-back opportunity. So that is how, if you've only got, say, the 3 acquisitions for the week, you can really, or 4 acquisitions for the week, you can really maximize those games, maybe get 5 games out of your 3 acquisitions instead of just 3 games. You're really boosting up the value of those limited acquisitions that you do have. If we have a look at how those pseudo back-to-backs play out, well, it's a little bit interesting the way it works out this week. Tuesday, Thursday, we've got 4 teams on that pseudo back-to-back: the Utah Jazz, the Phoenix Suns, the Washington Wizards, and the OKC Thunder. You're looking at guys from the Wizards, say like Kelly Oubre, Tomas Satoransky, with that interesting Tuesday, Thursday back-to-back. On Phoenix, Marquise Chris, Dragan Bender, Greggy Munro.
As Greg runs in, we realize this could get dangerous.
Alex Len, Tyson Chandler, Tyler Ulis, Mike James, any of those guys for the Suns might have value on that Tuesday, Thursday. Joshie Jackson even. Utah Jazz, Jonas Jurepko, Thabo Sefolosha, Alec Berkey Burks. Rocket Rodney Hood, if he was dropped, well, you'd add him regardless. We'll talk about the Jazz later on because Rudy Gobert is questionable to return for the start of this week. So that's going to be an intriguing situation whether he actually does get back in action. But then we're on the true back-to-back where you could actually stream players on that Thursday, Friday. No teams play a back-to-back there. So we don't have that option of streaming those guys in. But then Friday, Sunday to end the week, we do have that pseudo back-to-back again. And there's a plethora of teams: the Pelicans, the Mavericks, the Nuggets, the Pacers, the Pistons, the Celtics, the Raptors, and the Kings. So there's numerous players there. Darius Miller. I'll go through and give you just one sort of play from each team. Darius Miller from the Pelicans. JJ Barea from the Mavericks. For the Nuggets, you could look at old baby neck Wilson Chandler if he is back in action. For the Pacers, Corey Joseph or Domantas Sabonis. For the Pistons, you look at Stan Johnson. The Celtics, Marcus Morris, if he is around. Otherwise, you look at a guy like Terry Rozier or Vanilla Tice. The Raptors, we're talking about the Jedi, OG Anunoby, Normie Powell, Freddie Van Vliet on that pseudo back-to-back. And for the Kings, who bloody knows? I don't know what the hell's going to be going on with this team. Zach Randolph would be a great addition if he was around. You could look at BB8, Bogdan Bogdanovic. Budrick Hield is another guy you can have a look at there. The other thing we can look at, because again, this is me talking in generalities. Sometimes on those 10 game days on Wednesday and on Saturday, you might have one active spot available. So looking at really getting extra value, if you can afford it, is looking at teams that play three games in four nights. And we've got quite a few of them this week. The Phoenix Suns and the Washington Wizards and the Utah Jazz all start the week off by playing on Monday and then playing three games in four nights. So the Suns, the Wizards, and the Jazz start the week off that way. We've got a ton of teams that play three games in four nights starting on Wednesday, on that 10-game Wednesday. The Magic, the Bulls, the Hornets, the Cavs, the Grizzlies, the Spurs, and the Bucks all starting on Wednesday. So between Wednesday and Saturday, they play four games. And then on Thursday, the Sixers play, and they play three of their four games through Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So three games on those final 4 days of the week. So that is quite important when you're looking at, you know, structuring how you're going to set up your daily streaming strategy for the week. Matt Smith, of course, has an article up on Basketball Monster discussing all this stuff regarding the schedule analysis. Now, for weekly leagues, we want to look at what teams play the most amount of games. That's more important in weekly leagues. In daily leagues, you want to know when those teams play those games, which is sort of what I went through there. There's five teams this week that play two games: the Rockets, the Clippers, the Lakers, the Heat, and the Blazers. And really, it's Jim Harden that you're going to start. It's Chrissy Paul, maybe. And it's Dame Lillard, maybe, depending on the rest of your roster. Harden's the only absolute guarantee must start there out of those players. No one on the Clippers, no one on the Lakers, no one on the Heat is even going to come close to being a must-start player. We've got 20 teams that play four games, and then we've got another six teams that play three games: the Nets, the Warriors, the Wolves, the Thunder, the Kings, and the Raptors. All play three games for this week. So lots of interesting stuff that we can take a look at there in terms of looking at who's got easier schedules. A lot of your decisions will come down to that three game teams, who plays the easiest schedule out of them. The Raptors have the best run at it. They play the Suns, they play the Grizzlies and the Kings. The Warriors schedule is also pretty good, but you know, salvaging any sort of fantasy value from them can be tough. But maybe Jordy Bell is worth a look, although I'll talk about him a little bit later on in terms of what our expectations are for him. On the worst side of the three-game slate, we've got the Timberwolves, who play the Grizzlies, the Clippers, and the Mavericks, and the Thunder take on the Jazz and the Grizzlies. They do have the Nets sandwiched in there, but overall, their schedule doesn't look great. The Pelicans and the Hornets both play four games this week, as do the Pacers, but all four of those games are at home, whereas the Nuggets and the Wizards, all four of their games are on the road, whereas the Warriors play three games, and that is a road trip for them. The Blazers and the Clippers host both of their games at home this week, while the Heat and the Rockets have both of their games, and the Lakers on the road. And you can, of course, find all this information over on Basketball Monster with our schedule analysis and looking at Matt Smith's article over there as well. So do make sure you are checking all of that out over there. Now it's time for me to tell you about the great people over at Blue Apron. You guys know what Blue Apron is. It's the leading meal kit delivery service in the United States. And you might have heard of Blue Apron. You've probably heard it advertised in this podcast, but I want to give you an idea of what they actually do. So we're not talking about just sending recipes or sending prepackaged meals. Blue Apron sends fresh ingredients to you along with the recipes, giving you not only the ingredients, but the knowledge and the experience to cook wonderful restaurant quality meals at home. Now, my brother had been living in the United States. I'd used Blue Apron over at his place when I'd gone over there. I was going to say unfortunately, but I don't think my mother would be too happy with me saying it's unfortunate that he's no longer there. He has moved back to Australia in the last couple of weeks, so I won't be over there experiencing the Blue Apron taste, but you guys can definitely experience that. The meals that they have over there, they make me want to go back over there and go to one of your houses and you can cook me a Blue Apron meal. Who'd be up for that? Who wants to cook me a Blue Apron meal? Some of the stuff coming up in the next week on Blue Apron: baked Cajun catfish, spicy honey lime chicken tostadas, that looks real good, the creamy tomato pasta with mushrooms and collard greens, and chili butter steaks. Love some steak. That looks really appealing. The stuff over on Blue Apron looks absolutely fantastic. It tastes fantastic when you get there as well. They have a two-person meal plan and a family meal plan. One that the two-person one, of course, serves two people. The family meal plan serves four people, and you can choose numerous recipes per week. They rotate those recipes each week. So go and check it out over at Blue Apron. But don't just go to Blue Apron. Make sure you go to blueapron.com/LOFB. Blue Apron is treating all Locked On Fantasy Basketball listeners to their first dinner, a $30 value, for free if you visit blueapron.com/LOFB. Check out this week's menu and get yourself $30 off with free shipping at blueapron.com/LOFB. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. And not only are you able to take advantage of that free deal, but it also tells the people at Blue Apron that you are coming straight from this podcast and helps support the show in that way as well. All right, so let's talk about the teams who saw action across the weekend that I'm either not going to talk about in our review of Sunday's action or in the preview of Monday's game. So the first one of those teams I want to talk about is the Portland Trail Blazers, who have seen the return of El-Farouq Aminu in the past few days. And in the last game, Noel Vonleh saw his minutes cut pretty significantly. Now, some of that was El-Farouq Aminu getting extra playing time. Some of that was also the fact that Myers Leonard got in. We've seen Leonard do this a couple of times this season, get in there, play quite well, and then be out of the rotation again. Vonleh wasn't a 12-team league guy anyway. Aminu was before he got hurt. I'm not fully convinced that he's going to come back and be a must-own top 100 sort of player. You can absolutely add him if you want, but it's not an absolute scramble to go and grab El-Farouq Aminu. He's going to change things. I think that a lot of the stuff that he was doing beforehand, his high rebounding rate, will come down now that he has returned from his injury. Pat Connaughton had another solid start. He went down to something 17 minutes the game before, but it was back in the mid-20s in this one, and he is a solid source of streamers. And Mo Harkless, 5 minutes. He is cooked. I don't know what the hell has gone on with Mo Harkless. I used to really like him, but he has been an absolute atrocity for the majority of this season and clearly is not a 12 or even a 14-team league guy at this point. Speaking of shit shows, the Sacramento Kings made another change to that starting lineup. Dave Yeager just refuses to go, you know what, we've got two young guys, why don't we play them together? Refuses to do that. Skel Labissiere and Willie Cauley-Stein, they won't play together. In fact, he refuses to play Skel almost at all. They started, Cauley-Stein was back in the starting lineup alongside Costa Kufos, but then Cauley-Stein hurt his back. And no, we didn't replace him with Zach Randolph. No, we didn't replace him with Labissiere. Yeager replaced him with Jakar Sampson, a two-way player who has been proven shitful by the Philadelphia 76ers about 3 to 4 years ago. This sort of inept man management is baffling. Sampson had played, I think, 2 games total for the Kings all season. And then he played like 28 in that game where Cauley-Stein got hurt. Just see what Skel can do. Now, I don't know what Labissiere is doing to... Is he just Nerlens Noel-ing this thing and getting hot dogs at halftime? Is he mucking around at practice? Is he not learning stuff? Is he just not a good bloke? Every report I've heard of Skel, that's not the case at all. He showed out well down the end of the last season. He's shown some decent performances this season, but just refuses to get those minutes. I don't understand it. The Kings currently do not have one single player ranked inside the top 100. Therefore, to me, none of them are must-own guys. Yeah, you can own Randolph. Yeah, you can own Budrick. Willie Cauley-Stein's a must-own guy. We don't know his full status on the back, but he's a guy you'd own. But the other thing I've seen recently is that Bogdan Bogdanovic is getting more minutes, and he's looking really, really good. Now, he's not a must-own 12-team league guy because currently Garrett Temple's playing 35 minutes a night for whatever bullshit reason Dave Yeager wants to come up with. But Bogdanovic is playing well. And he is a 14-team league guy I would look at. De'Aaron Fox, I thought that he'd be a guy to hold on to in 12s. I'm not so sure anymore. He just doesn't seem to be really improving at the moment. The minutes fluctuate. We've got Frank Mason now in that mix, along with Georgie Hill and Fox taking those minutes, and it's really limiting the upside of any of these guys. It is just a complete and utter shit show, mainly from a fantasy point of view, but really in a real-life perspective as well for the Kings. It's really just tough to get a handle on what they and the Suns and the Hawks to a lesser degree just change things up on a day-to-day basis with literally no or seemingly no plan or no common sense attached to it. I'm going to talk about the Suns a little bit later because there's a lot of weird shit going on there as well. The other team that we're not going to really talk about in the other parts of the show today is the Toronto Raptors. There's not really a huge amount to see there. Norm Powell, not a 12-team league guy. He's seeing his minutes under 20 with the emergence of the Jedi, OG Anunoby, who has been starting, I think continues to start. We also had a big game from Jakob Poeltl in that last one with Bebe Noguera out with that calf injury. People are asking me, do I go and add Poeltl in 12-team leagues? I don't think we're quite at that level yet. There is still Valanciunas there who's getting his 20 minutes. Siakam's doing fine, but I don't think Pascal or Jakob are 12-team league guys, and Valanciunas and Ibaka are barely holding on. It is a real mess in that front court. And in fact, you could consider the 3, 4, 5 all real messes in terms of how to work out the value. You've got Miles, Powell, Anunoby, Siakam, Ibaka, Poeltl, and Valanciunas all pretty much splitting those minutes between those three spots. The other guy to look at, as I mentioned earlier, Freddie VanVleet, if you need some assists as a streaming option, he is playing quite well and will get 20 minutes a night, hit some threes at least until DeLon Wright returns. Also, Kyle Lowry, you know, back to killing it. He's a top 20 player again. And he was a real, you know, real solid buy low guy at the start of the season because he was struggling to make the top 70. And he was a guy that I did talk about quite a bit as a player you should buy low on. And you should have. And hopefully you did because it would be paying pretty significant dividends for you now. That does all of the wrap up of the weekend action. We'll talk about those other teams as well. Let's get into talk about what actually happened on Sunday. And then we'll get later on in the show into a big, big 11 game preview for Monday. All right, the monstrous line of the night for Sunday's games is Nikola Vucevic of the Orlando Magic, 34 and 12 for Vuce. He hit a triple. He had three assists and two blocks, and he was 13 of 19 from the field, and he hit all seven of his free throws. He's the 33rd ranked player this season in under 30 minutes a game, 17 and 8 and a half. His rebounds were quite low to begin the season. They have started to come up. In fact, over the last 2 weeks, he's up at 11 per game. Now, he was a 10 board per game guy last season. I'm not sure he gets back to that level. Just because he is taking more threes. But what we've seen over those last 2 weeks, his three-pointers are down, his three-point attempt rate is down in that time, and his rebounds are up. So that's sort of a trade-off that you have to expect with Vuce. But when he's only hitting 23%, which is what he's been doing over those last 8 games, then maybe he shouldn't be taking as many, and he should be staying closer to the basket and getting those rebounds. One thing we know for sure, he's not going to have his minutes taken away by Mo Spates or Bismack Biyombo. So he's going to get these 30 to 31 minutes per night most of these nights, and he's been a strong player and a guy that you could have gotten at significant value. I got him at about pick 50, I think 47 or something in the 30 deep league that I am in, and I was pretty happy with that as my second pick, and he's been a real strong option for me there as the monstrous line of the night. The waiver wire line of the night and the young gun of the night is the same player, and it means pretty much jack shit because Davis Bertans was great. He had 16 points with 4 triples, 4 rebounds, and 5 blocks. Yeah, and he was 6 of 12 from the field, but it doesn't mean anything. This was the weirdest box score from the Spurs with LaMarcus Aldridge out, with Pau Gasol rested in the second half, with Dan Green rested in the second half, with Pat Mills rested in the second half, with Tone Parker out, with Manu Ginobili out, with Joffrey LaVerne busting his finger up, with Kyle Anderson going down, with Kawhi Leonard out, with Rudy Gay out, with 9 guys out pretty much. Bertans had to play a ton of minutes. He played them. He put up numbers. But then he'll just go back to being a DMP CD. Now, Anderson looks like he's got a pretty significant injury, an MCL sprain, which is likely going to keep him out, I would say, 8 weeks. That's the timetable you're looking at for Ando. He's going to have an MRI on Monday to get more confirmation there. But you're going to have Gay come back and take some of those minutes. Leonard come back in a week or so, take those minutes. Brandon Paul's around. Brittany Forbes is there also. So I don't think that Bertans just automatically slips into that role. Maybe he finds himself in an 8 or 9 minute role per game over this short period of time and can do something. But I wouldn't be feeling overly optimistic. He's a 3-point streamer in a 30 team league sort of situation. And I like Bertans. He just doesn't seem to be getting the opportunity that he would need to have much of a fantasy impact this season. The dud of the night goes to Dion Waiters of the Miami Heat. 4 points with 1 rebound and 2 assists. He had the triple zero and was 1 of 10 from the field. But at least he hit both his free throws. I think that's something positive. Waiters has, in his last, let's count this up, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. In his last 13 games, Waiters has had 2 games with a positive Z score. That's not great. And that was one of those games was the one he scored 26 points on 24 shots. And the other one of those games was one he went 16, 4, and 5 with 3 steals. So he's had some games where he has scored well. There was a 21-point game in there, but it came on 20 shots with nothing else. As I've said a multitude of times, he's not a very good fantasy player. He's ranked outside the top 150 so far this season. He's the 201st ranked player in the last month, averaging 14.5 with 4 assists. But in saying that, 15 points, or roughly 15 points, 4 assists is valuable. Can you stomach the 36% from the field on 15 attempts? Can you stomach the below par free throws? They're not massively below par, but there's still not a positive there. The no steals, the no blocks. Can you stomach all that? The no rebounds. He just doesn't get rebounds at all. In a 10-team league, you can do better. There's no point in him being owned in a 10-team league. In a 12, you'd have to say that he still should be owned, but it's getting perilously close to saying, well, screw this, because this guy is just, yeah, murdering my field goal percentage in a pretty significant way. He's shooting 39% for the season. That's not a positive. It's, you know, over the last month, he's at a negative 2.5 in the Z score in that category. And that is obviously not a good result for big Deion Waiters. So a dud of the night, but almost close to a dud of the month for Deion. Let us now go into these box scores and talk about them in a bit more detail. Got that. You should have that up on your screen, hopefully, for you guys watching on the video. Yeah, there we go. All right. Now, the first game was the early one. That is the Orlando Magic and the New York Knicks. We talked about Vooch's big performance already. This was a bit of a different Knicks lineup, I guess, without Porzingis and without Timmy Hardaway, which we'll talk about a bit later. The Magic took advantage. They got the victory. Fournier, 20 points with 4 assists, 2 steals, and a block. That's a really full line back to some of his earlier work this season, but his efficiency wasn't quite there. Lord Alfred Payton continues to be good. 15, 6, and 5 with 2 steals. He should never have been dropped, in my opinion. You know, I'm a big Alfred Payton fan, and he is really putting up some good numbers recently. And I did tweet this out today, because people hear me say, you know, offer these trades, or this trade went down. And they go, Josh, you're talking shit. No, that's never going to happen. Someone messaged me today and said, oh, Josh, I'm considering trading my Kyle Lowry to get Alfred Payton back. I said, look, just that's a horrendous trade. Don't do that for a start. But people have different evaluations. Not everyone is as tuned in as what you are. And this guy's rationale was, oh, that's okay. I'm punting points and, punting free throws. So, you know, that could be, but that's not the rationale for the trade. That might make more sense to you in your head, but you can get more than Lord Alfred Payton and Kyle Lowry. Get 2 blokes, get 3 blokes. You can get way more than that. So these weird things do happen. And if someone out there threw that trade to me, I wouldn't even care how my team was structured. Just give me Kyle Lowry and I'll work it out later. And that's the sort of mentality that you should be having in that sort of a case. But these things do happen. Another person messaged me today, oh, Josh, is it okay to add Donovan Mitchell? I'm like, yeah, it is. Yep. And that's the second one of those, or third one of those I've had in the last, you know, 48 hours. So, you know, I can come out and say, you got to own him. And people go, Josh, man, he's been owned for weeks. Yeah, but not everyone. It's not in every case. And people don't listen to every episode necessarily, or they don't see what I tweet or write on Basketball Monster or anything like that. These things do happen. John Simmons, 38 minutes. He's going to get a shit ton of minutes. We know that. 16 and 7 with 2 assists and 2 steals. The efficiency was good as well. The usage is down, and that's going to be the problem. 21% is still pretty good, but he'd been hovering at about 25 before that. That's a really strong line from Simmer. The game before, I think he had 6 points, and he is going to fluctuate. He probably should be owned in 12-team leagues, but I'm not rushing to grab him and dropping a consistent top 100 type of play if my team is that strong to add John Simmons. As Gordon's shooting was not good in this one, 1 of 6 from 3 and 3 of 11 in total, 10, 4 and 4 with 2 steals. We knew that he was going to have some level of regression. It won't be this bad. It also won't be as good as what it had been previously. Still no John Isaac, so Aaron Aflalo getting a lot of those minutes there and doing his usual bunch of nothing. Onto the Knicks, Enes Kanter, 18 and 16, just a monster on the boards, scoring, doing it efficiently, being one of the best draft picks you could have made, I think, in the preseason. Well, Courtney Lee, one of the best guys you could have added off the wire, 19, 5, and 2 with 2 steals. He is still available in some leagues. I would add him. His consistency has been brilliant, especially with Timmy Hardaway Jr. going down. That gives us some more opportunities for Lee. Now, as for Hardaway, he was fine. And then pre-game, he noticed some soreness in his leg, and they're saying it's a stress-related injury. It's not a stress fracture. It's not even necessarily a stress reaction at this point. But they are going to evaluate him and work out what the timetable is. Seth Curry, we remember, he is dealing with a similar thing. Jrue Holiday and Bradley Beal have dealt with this in the past. This could mean a lengthy stint on the sidelines, or the fact that they said it's a stress injury, not necessarily a stress reaction or stress fracture, might mean that it's actually not as serious as any of those guys, and maybe he doesn't miss any time. So that's an interesting thing for us to keep an eye on. We just monitor it. We don't do anything with Tim at this point. Damian Dotson started for him. He had 2 points in 22 minutes. So in a 20-team league, you can go and add Dotto and see how that works. But it's more for Lee. It's more for Kanter, maybe more for Jarrett Jack, who dished his 7 assists, but he's not really a 10-team league or 12-team league sort of guy. And we also had rugged Ronnie Baker return into the rotation after basically not playing at all for all of this season. I don't think there's much more to talk about with the Knicks, except for Porzingis, who was apparently, a week ago, or whenever it was, Wednesday, he was ruled okay to return from that ankle injury. 5 days later, not able to play. So, again, I posited that maybe the Knicks' official press release, when they said available to return, they forgot to include the word not in there. Wouldn't be surprised by that. And day by day, it's starting to look that's more like the case. And hopefully Porzingis doesn't miss any more time. With him out, Mick Beasley started, had 21 points in 28 minutes, but in true Michael Beasley style, a very, very empty line aside from that. 3 rebounds, 1 assist, but he did add a block. And for short-term value, he can be useful while Porzingis is out. And of course, when Porzingis comes back, he becomes not useful. I don't want to spend too much time talking about the Spurs and OKC game, especially the Spurs side. As I said, no Manu, no Tone, no Gay, no Kawhi, no LaMarcus, and then Dan Green, Pau Gasol, Pat Mills all sat out the second half. So DeJounte Murray had 17, 11, and 5 in 39 minutes. That's great for his dynasty value. We really do like him for dynasty, but he's going to be a DMP CD for most of this season. Brandon Paul started and had 8 and 6 in 33 minutes with a steal and a block, while Brittany Forbes played 33 minutes and had 5, 1, and 1. Now, the negative news here is Kyle Anderson went down with that knee injury, which I talked about earlier on. An MCL sprain, which I would imagine would keep him out for 8 weeks. That's not confirmed. The sprain is not confirmed, but Woj reported they think it's an MCL sprain. And let's be honest, these doctors and these teams know pretty much if it's something bad, they know straight away. Sometimes they can't tell straight away, and then a scan later on will confirm it. But if they come in and say ACL torn, MCL sprain, they know that. And then they just get an MRI to confirm it. It's very rare they go, well, it's an MCL sprain. They come and go, well, actually, it's nothing. That's very rare. It's more the other case where they go, oh, it looks okay. And then they go, oh, shit, the scan actually shows a tear. That's more the way it goes. So I would be pretty confident that Anderson's in a fair bit of trouble with that knee. Now, the immediate reaction that people will have is Rudy Gay is a guy that we need to go and own. But I'm not so sure that's the case, because I think that if Rudy Gay had been fully healthy, he'd be playing these minutes over Kyle Anderson anyway. Like, he would have been playing 31, 32 minutes a night regardless over Kyle Anderson if he was physically capable of doing it. But he hasn't been, so therefore I presume that he is not physically capable of doing it. He saw his minutes trend down and play like 19 minutes, 20 minutes, 21. He's dealing with a knee problem himself here at the moment. So I think we're going to see a bit of Davis Bertans. I think we're going to see quite a bit of Brandon Paul. I think we're going to see some more Brittany Forbes go in there as well. So I don't think that this makes us get Rudy Gay to become this 28-minute, 30-minute-a-night player while Anderson's out and before Leonard returns. I just don't think that will be the case, because, again, I think if Gay had been capable of doing that, he would already have been doing that, and Kyle Anderson would have played his 24 minutes a night and Gay would have played 30 instead of the other way around, which is what it currently is. On to the Thunder, Alex Abrines returned to the rotation and did pretty much nothing, 5-2-1. Billy Donovan continues to try and find something in that second unit. Terry Ferguson was out of the rotation. Joshy Huestis was there. There's just nothing happening on the bench and nothing happening for fantasy either. Stevie Adams, 19-10 with 3 steals and a block, another strong game from him, while Russ had a triple-double, but just a horrendous percentage night. 2 of 6 from the line, 9 of 22 from the field for Westbrook. And there's things that just really annoy the shit out of me in the NBA. One of them is the fact that Russell Westbrook takes the technical free throws. Paul George was on the court. Paul George should be taking the technicals. I have no idea why Russ is doing it. We've seen he's done it before. I think he was doing it when Alex Abrines or Dougie McDirt were on the court last year. And these are like 90% free throw shooters. And Russ takes it. It just, especially with his form this year, that is just something that just shouldn't happen. It's piss poor, and it really shouldn't happen, but it does. Speaking of piss poor, it wasn't Paulie George's best night. He was 2 of 17 from the field. Yuck. 8, 8, and 4, but he is I'll get this actually right so I'm not just spouting off shit. He is, over the last month of the season, which my numbers were in front of me, I'm going to say he was a top 10 player over the last month. I'll just, while you guys just twiddle your thumbs, I'll just bring those numbers up to it so I can actually tell me the exact number there. No, it's not going to cooperate, so that's great. But over the last month, he is a top 10 player. So I think we can give him somewhat of a pass for this sort of a piss poor performance for Paulie George. The next game we take a look at is the Golden State Warriors and the Miami Heat. Just a massive, massive blowout. I was a little bit worried about Steph and his finger. That turned out to be fine. He shot 69% from the field.
Giggity.
30 points, 5 triples, 2 rebounds, 3 assists and 2 steals, while Durant had 24, 3 and 7. Sean Livingston got ejected for making contact with an official when, in all honesty, it looks like the official makes contact with Sean Livingston. He comes forward towards Livingston and puts his head into him. It looks, they were like pressing foreheads, but it looks like the official initiated it. Really weird stuff. Livingston was out. He's going to miss Monday's game due to rest anyway. Andre Iguodala missed another game with this knee soreness, so he's sort of in and out of lineups. That gives Omri Caspi some deeper league sort of ability. He had 10 and 5 in 25 minutes here. Jordy Bell, the guy that everyone's really, really keen to go the old Dutch rudder on. 13 minutes for Bell, 4 and 3 with a block. Now, I love Bell. You've heard me talk about Jordan Bell plenty of times, but people go over the top, and then it makes me feel or seem like I'm being negative on these guys. Jordan Bell, must-own player. He's going to play 22, 25 minutes a night. Like, no, he's not. Like, he's just not going to play those minutes. I believe that at some point he probably will supplant Zaza Pachulia as the starting center. I think it could happen in February. It might not. It probably should, but it might not happen. But that doesn't mean he's coming in and playing 22 to 25 minutes, because I can 100% assure you that David West is playing 12 minutes a night every night. Zaza will play his 16 minutes a night. So in order for Bell to get his minutes, that would mean no minutes for Draymond at center, no minutes for Durant at center. And that's just not something they're going to do. Bell has been good all season, but he just hasn't even been in the rotation. And that was bad from Steve Kerr. He should never have been behind JaVale McGee. He should never have been behind Kevon Looney. And from now on, I don't think he will be. But I also don't think that he's going to be playing 22 to 25 minutes a night. I think a 15 minute a night role is probably a decent expectation. It might be 14 now and move up to 16 or 17 later on. And that can be valuable, but he's really going to be a contributor in standard leagues in field goal percentage. He's like an 80% field goal guy at the moment or something like that. And blocks. That's really all he's going to contribute in. I love him. He's got top 50 future upside. I've said that numerous times, but we're getting really excited. He has this one big game against Orlando and it was a great game. Lock him in, own him, must own, the top 100 from here on out, 22 minutes a night. No. Unless Draymond goes down, I cannot see from here on out him averaging 25 minutes a night. It just feels absolutely improbable. Pat McCaw, 19 minutes for Patty, 2, 3, and 3. He'll be an interesting guy if you are looking for a point guard option on Monday with Livingston out, but it's an 11-game Monday, so probably won't be able to find the minutes for him there. On to the Heat. Goran Dragic, the iron shoulder. Turns out he's not horrible, and he did have a good game. He'd had 3 absolute turds in a row, but this was a nice performance. 20 points in 25 minutes, 4 triples with a pair of steals on 70% shooting, so you can feel rest assured there. While Bam Adebayo made another start, 9 points, but he is not the player you want in 12-team leagues. Kelly Olynyk is that guy. 14, 7, and 5, a block and a 3 in 28 minutes. He is a 12-team league guy until at least Hassan Whiteside returns. Justice Winslow, really just kicking it for deep leagues. 7 points in 21 minutes. While Joshy Richardson, another solid game. 12 points, 2 assists, 2 triples, 46% shooting. He should be owned, I think, in every 12-team league. But I am a decent fan of Josh. The Duke, Wayne Ellington, dropped in 3 triples for his 9 points. Played 27 minutes. What more can you ask of the Duke? The Los Angeles Clippers and the Minnesota Timberwolves. I don't know what the hell to say about this Clippers starting lineup. They moved Lou Williams to the bench, which is totally fine. Get him to run that second unit. They moved Montrezl the Table Harrell to the second unit. And they started both of their two-way contract players. CJ Williams replaced Lou Williams. And Jamil Wilson replaced Montrezl Harrell. Now, CJ Williams started. He played only 13 minutes and had 5 points. That's not really going to do much. But Jamil Wilson's interesting. 29 minutes for him. 9 points with 3 triples. But the Rooster Danilo Gallinari is targeting a return on Wednesday, which is the Clippers' next game. And if he comes back, I would imagine he immediately starts. He starts at the 4 and Wes Johnson starts at the 3. So that value that maybe Sammy Decker had, that maybe Montrezl Harrell could have had, that maybe Jamil Wilson might have had because he played 29 minutes here, I don't think it's going to last at all, even to the next game, assuming that the Rooster is ready to come back. So don't be looking overly hardly at Harrell or Decker or even Jamil Wilson outside of quite deep leagues. As for Lou Will, 23, 5 and 10 with 3 triples, a strong game. But I want to take a minute to talk about Austin Rivers because he is one of the most maligned players in the NBA. But he is the toughest bloke in the NBA, I think. And he has actually turned into a good player. Now, it doesn't mean that he's necessarily turned into this awesome fantasy player, but he has turned into a good player, and he is doing his best to shoulder the load for this Clippers team that is struggling. Over the past 2 weeks, he's a top 75 player. He's a top 40 player over the last 4 weeks, in large part because he's improved his efficiency. For the season, he's shooting under 40%, but in that time, with an increased responsibility and a big usage bump, he is shooting 45% and 41% from three, and even upped his free throws to 71%. If he can keep that efficiency in check, and keep it solid, his scoring, his threes, his assists, he gets steals, that makes him a must-own guy. But yeah, based on what we've seen from him in the past, will he be able to maintain that level of efficiency? No, you'd have to think probably. He was a 44% guy last season, 44 the year before, but this year he has really struggled, but has turned it around recently and is trending in the right direction. So I would be looking at Austin Rivers, if he's on the waiver wire, to go and add him. DeAndre Jordan had 17 and 12 here as well. On to the Timberwolves. The fact that they, you know, it took so long to actually get over the top of the Clippers at home is not ideal. They played an 8-man rotation. So Buzz completely out of the rotation, and Nemanja Bjelica out injured. So 8-man rotation, and still couldn't get the job done. Karl-Anthony Towns looked lost offensively, standing in the corner a lot. They just don't give him the ball enough. Only 13 shots for Townsie. He was 15 and 12 with two triples, a nice double-double, but I've continued to say this. I hate the way they're using him. His defense sucks. And if you can trade him away for another top 10 player, given the head-to-head playoff schedule, I would do it. Wigo was putrid, 12-3-1 on 15 shots, but Jim Butler was good. 33-8-4, two triples, a steal and a block, 20 shots. He's the best player on this team. It's not really even remotely close. He should be the guy that is getting the majority of the ball. And you know, I do really question what Tom Thibodeau does as a coach. I think he needs to... This is what we need to see more often. We need to see Butler in getting the ball, handling the ball. Jeff Teague only took 10 shots.
My name is Jeff.
So that's better. 9 points with 10 assists and 3 steals. But we don't want this situation where all these guys are taking 15 shots per game. Towns needs to get more involved. There's just so many questions I have about the Timberwolves. Tyus Jones, 13 minutes. If you added him with the hope that he was somehow going to split minutes with Jeff Teague, A, you were always wrong that that was going to be the case, and B, you're seeing that transpire now. Well, Gorgui Dieng, the revitalization, the renaissance, the renewal, it's not happening. It was never going to happen either. 19 minutes, 6-5. Please, just don't bother. There's no reason to hold him in 10 or 12 team leagues unless Taj Gibson goes down or Karl-Anthony Towns goes down. That is the only hope. And again, as I said, you might as well hold on to Tyus Jones in that case. You might as well hold on to any of these guys. You might as well go hold on to Bobby Brown in case both Chris Paul and James Harden go down. You just can't hold in that situation, just continually rack up zeros and zeros and zeros, or you know, figurative zeros, not literal zeros. The next game to take a look at is the last game of the night, the Houston Rockets and the LA Lakers. Jim Harden was great, 36-4-9 with 4 triples and 2 steals, and Chrissy Paul got his scoring going, 21 points with 4 triples, 6 assists and 2 steals. This team is a significant problem for everybody in the NBA, and Paul and Harden working together is totally fine. Clint Capela only played 23 minutes, but he had 13 boards with 3 blocks and a steal, being one of the stars of this year. And finally, Eric Gordon got it going again. But have a look at the line. 22 points, 1 rebound and 0 assist, and shot 53% on 17 shot attempts. So that shooting percentage, unsustainable. The fact that no other numbers there is a problem. I would still own him, but he is going to be a guy that I don't think is a must-own player at some point this year. Trevor Ariza added 3 steals and not much else. Well, Ryan Anderson lasted only 12 minutes before going out with back tightness. PJ Tucker replaced him. Neither Tucker nor Anderson or Luke Marmute, who should also figure to get a boost in minutes if Anderson misses time, none of those guys are 12-team league players. Speaking of not 12-team league players, let's head to the LA Lakers side of things. Julius Randle, I don't know what to make of this exactly. 16 minutes for Randle, 5-5 with both Kyle Kuzma, the future MVP, and Larry Nance performing well. I still would hold Randle in 12-team leagues, but we're going to go back to that situation we had at the start of the season when he just wasn't able to get enough playing time. Kuzma played 28 minutes and had 22 and 12. He is an atrocious defender, but he's providing nice fantasy numbers and should be owned. Well, Nance had 15 and 8 with 2 steals and a block, and he probably should be a 12-team league guy. And I would most likely, depend on the team, but I would have both of those guys over Randle. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope bounced back from a real stinker, 16-3-1 with 4 triples, and Ingram had 18-9-5. It wasn't Lonzo's best game, I'll give him that. He was dealing with some sore calves. 2-1-3, added 2 blocks and was 0-4 from the field. Someone did message me today saying, Lonzo is so inconsistent, he has more bad games than good games. Should I trade, hold, or drop? And whenever I get those questions, trade, well, it depends. Like, what are you getting back from him? I'm sure after he puts up a 2-point game, you're probably not going to get the greatest return on Lonzo Ball, but you can explore it. But drop. This is a points league, and again, I'm not calling these people out. I want to just highlight some of the things that do happen. There's a points league, and he's the 48th ranked player in points leagues this season. You don't drop the 48th ranked player. You just don't do it. So maybe you can trade him. It depends what you get back. And inconsistency, I understand, maybe that's frustrating, but this is a bad game. But he puts up numbers in those other categories, and they are still really useful. He was dealing with a calf problem. I'm not overly concerned about his overall production. Brandon Ingram, another strong game, 18-9-5, and he looks like he is really figuring it out. Well, Jordy Clarkson, a guy I've been talking about as a significant regression candidate, he regressed 21 minutes, 5 points on 9 shots. The usage is still high, but the efficiency didn't feel like it was going to hold, and the minutes down to 21 makes it hard for him to be a standard league guy. He still is, but just it is a situation to monitor as we move forward into the season, or into the rest of the season, maybe. That's more accurate for me to say. All right, let's go through this and let's take a quick break now, and then we're going to come back all refreshed, all rejuvenated to talk about all 11 games for DFS for Monday. Before we do that, we will have a song called Propeller by Jake McKelvey and the Countertops.
Companion, a tired road, a sleeper in the grass. The days are ruined. It's like a thousand afternoons just landed in my lap and swore themselves to secrecy. But whatever they're keeping is not worth me seeking.
Guys, we're back. Let's talk perfect DFS for Sunday on FanDuel. Austin Rivers, 43.5, and DeJounte Murray, 43.7. Good luck of having Murray in there. Evan Fournier, 36.6, and Jimmy Harden, 56.3. Jim Butler, 53.6, and Brandon Ingram, 41.3. Davis Bertans, probably even more unlikely to have in there, 34.8. The future MVP, 37.4. And Nick Vucevic at 57.9 for a total of 406.1, and that costs $59,500 on DraftKings. Harden, 58.5. Austin Rivers, 47.75. Bertans, 32.5. The future MVP, 41. Stevie Adams, 41.5. Murray, DeJounte, 45.25. Ingram at 40.25. And Jim Butler at 43.5 for a total of 360.25. And that cost $48,800. Let's move on to Monday, an 11-game NBA slate for FanDuel. Well, not for FanDuel, for all sites, because of course they are using the same NBA schedule. So let's have a look at that first game. It is the Orlando Magic and the Charlotte Hornets. The Hornets are favored by 8, and the total is 220 points. The Magic, of course, coming off that back-to-back after playing against the New York Knicks. John Isaac has missed, it feels like, forever. I don't think we should count on him being ready to go in this game for the Magic, so that'd be a few extra minutes for Mo Spates and maybe Aaron Aflalo, but nothing to get too excited about. Kemba Walker has been ruled probable with his shoulder problem, while Frank the Tank Kaminsky is dealing with a right foot sprain, and he is also probable. Let's look at the point guards here, though. Kemba's at 7,800. He's got a pretty good record against Orlando. I do like him as an option here, assuming he's ready to play, which we have to assume that he is going to be ready to play here. As for Lord Alfred Payton at 7,400, I'd take the extra 400 and I'd take Kemba in this situation, so I'd probably fade Lord Alfred here. DJ Augustin and Michael Carter-Williams, nothing to see. At shooting guard, Nick Batum is down to 5,500, mainly because he's been playing pretty shithouse. 18-point average over his last five. That is a very, very good price for Batum. I think you should be looking, you should have an expectation of 30 points for him, and I'd be happy to use him even in cash despite the poor recent form. 6,300 for Fournier is a little bit too high for his French compatriot. Jez Lamb at 6,400 with Kemba back, with Batum around. I think 6,400 for Lamb is just too high. He's averaging only 28 over the last three, and that's not paying the bills at 6,400. At small forward, Jono Simmons, 5,600. Well, he's going to play a lot of minutes. I'm happy with using him at that price. He is more of a useful DFS option than he is a category league player. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist at 5,300, that's too expensive for my tastes. And by the way, FanDuel in total, the pricing is extraordinarily tight, so be expected to look at low scores, and especially in cash games, and tournaments be decided by some real luck of the roll, dice, whatever the phrase is I'm trying to say, just some weird performances going off, because trying to find the value plays on FanDuel, it's not a real easy task on Monday. On DraftKings, the pricing is significantly looser, so there's a little bit more value there. At power forward, Marv Williams, no interest there. As Gordon, 8,400, probably a little bit too expensive for Gordo. He'd been putting up the strong numbers, but 8,400 is not a number that I'm really keen to pay for him. While the Frank the Tank at 4,100, you're not really feeling good about that either. Nick Vucevic, love what he's been doing, 7,600, but Dwight Howard can be a considerable concern defensively, so I'd look at Vuc only in tournaments, and that's about it, whereas Dwighty at 7,400, the numbers haven't quite been there for Dwight of the last couple of games, but prior to that, he'd been putting up some nice ones. I think a 33 to 35 point performance is a realistic almost floor for Howard in this sort of a matchup, so I'd be okay with going back to him. Code Zeller had a big game in the last one because Dwight really sucked, but I wouldn't be reading too much into Zeller's 30-point performance in his last outing. Over on DraftKings, for some tournaments, I think Fournier at 5,500 is definitely a guy to have a look at, as is Marvin Williams at 3,700. Now, Williams had been struggling, but he did put up 30 in the Hornets' last game, and he's got a very good record against the Magic, so I think that he's worth looking at that price in particular. And MKG, hated him on FanDuel, but on DraftKings at 4,000, that's very, very cheap. So I do think that he has got 30-point upside there, and that makes him a tournament type of guy. For cash, Alfred at 6,000, love it. Batum at 57 is also pretty strong, as is John Simmons at 5,000 and Kemba at 7,500. So some decent value in quite a few people over on DraftKings for this game. Let's move on to the next one now. It is the New York Knicks taking on the Indiana Pacers. Kristaps Porzingis and Tim Hardaway have already been ruled out.
Porzingis.
So we're going to have more Mick Beasley. We're probably going to have another start from Damian Dotson. Let's have a look how this GPP or tournament or DFS or cash or whatever value. What's the word? DFS. That's the word I'm looking for. Let's see how the value all pans out. Frankie Ntilikina at 3,500. Looked a bit better today. He had a 30-point game the last time they played the Pacers. I don't think that's probably on the cards here. So I don't think he's really worth too much of a look. While Jarrett Jack would be. But the problem is he's priced up to 4,800. So I'm not going there. I do think Daz Collison at 5,900 can be a solid cash point guard. While Corey Joseph at 39 may be a tournament. But I just don't really see much in terms of upside for him. At shooting guard, well, with no Timmy Hardaway, we're not going to be able to use him. But Vic Oladipo is just priced out of the ass. It's just huge. 9,200 for Vic. Now, fair enough, because he's been killing it, averaging 54 over his last five, and I would absolutely not shy away from Oladipo in a tournament. But in cash, that's hard, especially given the pricing of other players. Finding other guys at a decent enough cheap price to fit around Oladipo is probably going to be a tough ask. At small forward, Bojan Bogdanovic is at 4,500. He's always got that 30-point upside, so should be in your tournament pool. Well, Doug McDirt, he played 30 minutes and had 14 points. He's at 3,500, so actually wasn't too far off value, but he is just a putrid fantasy player. While Courtney Lee at 5,500, he's the guy that you lock in with cash, get your 30 points, get out alive, and then put some other guys around him. One of the few actual value plays that is around on FanDuel. Lance Stephenson at 4,500, he's been up and down with some okay games. I don't think it's a horrendous play to use. To use Lance in this one, but I also don't think it's the best one on the board. As for Dotson, I probably should have included him as a tournament guy. He's at 3,500 in a start. Maybe he can hit some threes. I wouldn't be feeling super confident about that, though. At power forward, Michael Beasley's at 5,000. He had 24 today, which isn't quite at value, even though you look at his thing and go, okay, 21 real-life points, that's pretty good, and then just nothing else. So he's worth a look, but yeah, I don't feel super confident with Beasley in cash. Well, Thaddeus Young's at 5,700. That's a pretty strong price for Thaddeus, and I think that in cash, he's a good old guy to have a look at. Well, Domantas Sabonis at 53. The minutes have been down closer to 20 in the last two games, and that's not a recipe for value at that price. At center, the Cock Monster, Kylo Quinn, 3,900, has been close to 20 on most of the recent games. I think he's more a GPP guy than cash because he can disappear a bit. Well, I do like Enes Kanter a lot. 6,600. Centers have exploited Miles Turner quite a bit this year defensively, and I think Kanter can go out there and do a similar thing. As for Turner, he is priced at 7,100. I think that a 35-point performance is not out of the realms of possibility. Neither is a 40-pointer. I don't feel great about his floor, so therefore I would look at him more as a tournament type of a guy. Over on DraftKings for tournaments, there's a few guys I like. O'Quinn at 4,200. Sabonis at 51 is okay there. Oladipo at 87 for the reasons I talked about earlier. Daz Collison at 57. I mean, you might even lean that to more towards cash for Collison. Boyan at 45. For cash, it's Beasley at 3,500. Even if he shits the bed, he should be able to get 3,500's worth of value. Jarrett Jack at 39, I think he's extraordinarily strong for a cheap point guard. And Miles Turner at 61, I'm in on that for cash. Enes Kanter, 62. And Courtney Lee at 52, round out the cash options in that Knicks and Pacers battle. Won't quite be like the old 90s battles, I'm sure, but there'll be something there for us to see. The next game, the Phoenix Suns and the Philadelphia 76ers. The Phoenix Suns shit show of a coaching, management, player situation continued. I'm sure you've all seen that gif of the Suns players all standing around, daisy chaining each other while the Celtics are just jacking up threes and them not giving anywhere close to two shits about anything that's going on. It is completely embarrassing for them, the coaching staff, and the front office. Just that 1 5-second clip is completely indicative of the bullshit that goes on in this organization. Now, Earl Watson's gone because he never should have been a head coach. Jay Triano was in, and he is making us almost as infuriated as what Watson is. Now he's in this mode, and we'll see if it continues, but basically for the last four games, the three centers, Alex Len, Tyson Chandler, and Greg Munro.
As Greg runs in, we realize this could get dangerous.
They're on a rotating DNPCD situation. According to my calculations, this should be Greg Munro's turn to have a DNPCD. I don't know if that will be the case. Alex Len is dealing with an ankle problem, so maybe Len has another game out. But if Greg Munro gets a DNPCD in this game, Triano should just automatically be marched out of that place. I don't know how you can run a professional organization where you're running these three big men and you're just going, all right, blokes, just how about you guys just take it in turns? All right, everyone has it. No, everyone's just got to have a fair go. That's just how we're going to do it. Give everyone a fair go. That's not how it works in any sort of professional environment. Jay, it is bullshit. It is bullshit, and frankly, if I was to say it again, it's bullshit, and it shouldn't continue. But if it does, if Munro is a DNPCD, I am going to be absolutely steaming at this sort of ineptitude that goes on with this team. Not only that, the front office is calling out its own players, like Marquise Chris, for being fat. He is. He looked horrendous at Summer League. His ass was gigantic. He looked fat. I just don't understand what's wrong with this team. Yeah, and I feel sorry for Suns fans. No, plenty of Suns. Matt Smith's a Suns fan. Sam Macy, who we've had on this podcast plenty of times, is a Suns fan. Good people. They don't deserve this bullshit. Yeah, Tim Tompkins from the Drive and Dish podcast, Suns fan. These are all good blokes, and they don't deserve this bullshit, but this is just horrendousness after horrendousness. And it doesn't actually show signs of abating, which is a real problem. Enough of that. As for injuries, again, Alex Len, questionable with that ankle. Well, Timothy John McConnell for the Philadelphia 76ers has missed the last couple with a shoulder issue. He is questionable. If he is out, more minutes for Bayless, more minutes for Šarić, and more minutes for Benny Simmons as well. At point guard, McConnell's at 5,100. Really hard to use him in that situation. While Tyler Ulis at 4,000. Well, he's part of the Triano, your turn, then your turn, along with Mike James. So never can rely upon him in cash, but he does have 30-point upside. So Ulis is a GPP option, but that's really about it. As for James, he's less of an option and he costs $500 more, so I wouldn't be feeling too confident about using him. As for Bayless, I don't think there's much really to see there. At shooting guard, JJ Redick at 5,700. Probably a little bit too high for cash, or definitely a little bit too high. It is a good matchup for him, but that's pushing the bounds of friendship. I'd be more interested in him as a tournament 35, 40-point upside play, and that can work in tournaments. Devin Booker's at 7,000. Love that for Book. Really strong play. I think it's almost a lock for cash. Really like him at 7,000. He's not immune to criticism, though. I think he's turned into a very good player this year, but still has some horrendous, horrendous traits. And he was part of that defensive nonchalance against the Celtics, which is, you can talk about, the Sixers process. Oh, it teaches bad habits to the players losing. No, this is what is, this is the problem. Like, the Sixers weren't like this. The problem is this sort of apathy and bullshit that goes through. And when, you know, Booker's your franchise star and leader, he needs to not be allowing this shit to happen. I know he's only young, but he's got to be showing more effort than that. But in terms of fantasy value, he's been fantastic this season, and I think that's a really strong play for him. TJ Warren at 7,300, I think that's also a pretty good option, whereas Bob Cove is up to 7,000. Yeah, I love what Bob Cove did in the last one, almost knocked out 50 points, but prior to that, he'd been poor, for pretty, normal reasons, given the death of his cousin. I think he's still just a tournament guy, though, at that sort of a price tag. I don't think we really want to get into Joshy Jackson at 38. At power forward, Benny Simmons, 10,500. I wonder how long it is until they turn him into a point guard on FanDuel. This is a supreme matchup for Simo. That price is pretty high. I would be looking at him as a tournament, much like I talk about, when there's these high price guys, finding the other guys to go around them in cash can be quite tough. So I think he is a tournament guy here with clear 60-point upside. But if he comes in at 42 or 43, it's not really going to get cut it in cash, especially because you can't really recoup that value all that easily in other spots. Marquise Chris, 3,900. Is he the most mentally infuriating player in the NBA? I know Nerlens Noel's around, but Chris could really be challenging that, and he has just been putrid all season. Amir Johnson, 3,900. Strong game in the last one without Embiid, but not much to really care about as we move forward. While Saric is up to 6,400, which is an expensive price, but if McConnell is out, there's a chance for 34 minutes for Saric, and that makes him interesting. But that price, it pretty much excludes him in most cases. But I don't think you should completely annihilate him or remove him from your tournaments. Dragan Bender at 35, Jared Dudley, just nothing for them either. At center, Embiid at 10-4, the similar situation to Simo. Really interesting tournament play, could smash through 70, but if he gets 35 or 40, it's really not good for your cash lineups here. Whereas Tyson Chandler, Alex Len, Greg Monroe, who knows, man? Maybe I do know. Maybe Monroe is out, but I literally have no idea what's going to happen. Otherwise, you can put Chandler into a tournament. You could put Len into a tournament. You could put Monroe into a tournament, and you would have no idea who's going to get the minutes or who's going to play or what other bullshit Triano is going to pull, which is always an issue. On DraftKings, some tournament guys: Ulis at 4,100, Bob Cove at 6,200, a much more palatable price for Covington on DraftKings, while Tyson Chandler at 4,300 is also worth a tournament look for some 30-point upside, perhaps. Joel Embiid at 9,800, I'm in on him in cash on DraftKings. That's a much better price. Benny Simmons at 9,800, I think, is also a cash play. And it also helps that DraftKings does have more value, so you can feel a bit more confident by putting those guys into cash. TJ Warren at 6,700 and Dario Saric at 5,600 is also a cash option over on DraftKings. All right, let's move on to the next one. It's the Milwaukee Bucks and the Boston Celtics. The Celtics are favored by 6. The total is 202.5. Matty Dellavedova has been listed as out, so we're not expecting him to play in this one, obviously, because he's bothered by that knee injury. It just means we're going to see more Jason Terry and more DeAndre Liggins. And of course, according to the coaching rulebook, vets deserve minutes over reigning rookies of the year, even if they're far inferior players. So expect to see Terry and Liggins in ahead of Brogdon to really just piss us off and further cement the idea that Jason Kidd is, in fact, a shit coach. At point guard, Eric Bledsoe's at $7,000. I like what Bledsoe's been doing. The Celtics are quite a tough matchup, but I think that at 7,000, I'd feel okay in a depressed FanDuel market. Whilst Kyrie at 8,500, again, on the other side, the Bucks are pretty good defensively against point guard. So Kyrie could have some problems. But I think, again, we're not looking at necessarily 5.5x value here. If we can get 5 or 4.8, I think would be okay. And I think Kyrie getting that value at a price that's come down by $700 is definitely worth a look. Rozier, nah. Shooting guard, Chrissy Middleton, 7,000, been putting up some strong numbers, but not quite $7,000 worth, but I think he does have that tournament upside, so he's a GPP guy, while Marcus Smart at 6,000. You'd almost have to think he's close to cash, but he's not quite there just because that shooting fluctuation. Tone Snell, nah. Brogo at 4,500. I just cannot put any faith in what Brogdon's going to do given the minutes. Well, Jason Terry, well, we know he's going to play because it's December. And when it's December, your 55-year-old guards have to play. That's the unwritten rule. I think the Players Association wrote that in, that vets only play in December. So Jason Kidd's just doing what he's told. At small forward, Jaylen Brown at 5,800. He made that value up in the last game, but had struggled prior to that. I don't feel confident about him as a cash play. While Yanni, in that similar Simmons and Embiid boat, probably even, you know, the captain of that boat, maybe he's the coxswain of it. 12,400 is very expensive. He can get you 70. Easy. But, yeah, that's a big price to pay for Antetokounmpo, so I would not feel comfortable about using him in cash. The Muppet John Henson at 5,700. I think that's a really decent cash option. I like him here. While Marcus Morris at 5,000. I actually don't hate that for cash. He's either coming off the bench or starting. He gets you 25 most nights, and that's not a bad cash play in this sort of a setup. Jason Tatum's at 61. So it's the first time in a while we've seen Tatum be priced higher than Jaylen Brown, and that makes me move Tatum down my list and not interested in using him. At center, Ali Horford, 7,500. Been putting up some okay numbers, and we've seen teams put up good numbers as big men against the Bucks this season. So he'd be an interesting tournament guy, and you could even squeeze him into cash, I think. Whereas Bainsey and Thon McCur, the two Aussie centers going up against each other, I don't really see the value in putting either of those guys into a lineup. On DraftKings, we've got Kyrie at 8,500. We've got Horford at 7,600 as tournament guys. Then you've got the Muppet John Henson at 46 as a cash play. Chrissy Middleton for cash at 63. Marcus Smart at 54. I like that for cash. That's a strong price. While Yanni is down at 10,600 on DraftKings. Again, the value just really exudes from the DraftKings site. While Bledsoe at 6,700 is also worth looking at in a cash format. Let's look at the next one. It is the Brooklyn Nets taking on the Atlanta Hawks. The Hawks are favored by 2, and the total is 217.5. For the Hawks, Luke Babbitt is probable. He will likely start on the bench behind Ersan Ilyasova and Miles Plumlee. We know that the Baptist is out. We know that the Undertaker is out for the Hawks. Let's talk point guards here. We've got Spencer Dinwiddie, who is the starting point guard for the Nets. He's at 7,500. He's been putting up some pretty strong numbers lately. It's a positive matchup for him. I feel pretty good about using him. Same as Dennis Schroeder, though. But the problem I have with Schroeder, he is at 8,400. So to a lesser degree, he's in the Simmons Embiid category. You go, well, he can get that value, but if he doesn't, you're screwed. So more of a tournament type of guy at that price tag. But at a lower price, I'd love him for cash in this spot. At shooting guard, Kent Bazemore, 5,600. He's just too inconsistent for me. While Caris LeVert at 48, probably not going to see enough playing time to really get that going with everyone back. While Marco Bellinelli at 4,900. I like what Bally's been doing, but that's just too high for a guy whose production can vary. At small forward, the blue swimmer, Alan Crabb, 5,600. I have no interest in him. Jumpin' Joe Harris at 4,000. In a tournament, but in an 11-game slate, not really a high-priority player. Whereas the artist formerly known as Torian Prince at 5,700. And DeAndre Bembry at 3,700 are both tournament options. Bembry dropped 23 in 22 minutes in the last game, and at 3,700, that is fantastic value. Damari Carroll at 6,100 against his former team, his former coach. I think a 30-pointer here for Carroll is not a stretch at all. I think it's not a guarantee, but it's pretty good value, and I do like him as a somewhat lock-ish type small forward. At power forward, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson at 7,300. Well, he played 21 minutes off the bench in the last game, so I don't feel good about him at all at that price. Or Trevor Booker, who started in place of Hollis Jefferson in the last game, put up 1.7 points in 16 minutes. So again, with that uncertainty about how that will go with RHJ, I don't think we can use either of those guys. For the Hawks, Ilyasova's at 5,600. He's going to start, but will he go 35 points? Will he go 25 points? At 5,600, I don't want to take that risk in cash. And the centers, Miles Plumlee had 23 in the last game. He's at 3,700. A lot of his value came from three blocks. So you can look at that and go, oh, maybe, but I would tend to say no and not be too keen. But Tyler Zeller, the other nondescript white center on the other side, 3,800 for Tyler. His minutes are consistent. His production is pretty consistent. I think getting 20 points out of Tyler Zeller is totally understandable and totally expected. So I think 20 points at 3,800, fine. Get him in. Get him in as your starting, as your center, and build some value in some other spots. That is a possibility for cash games on FanDuel for Zeller. Over on DraftKings here, there's a lot of tournament players in this one, I think. Bembry's at 3,900, Bellinelli's at 44, Formerly is at 5,300, Dennis Schroeder at 8,000, Ersan's at 48, and the Blue Swimmer is at 4,700. Some tournament value on all of those guys. For cash, it's Damari at 59, it's Spencer Dinwiddie at 7,000, and it is Tyler Zeller at 3,400 as a really cheap cash center option, as I talked about on the FanDuel side of things. All right, let's go to the next one. It is the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Chicago Bulls. This should be a good game. The Cavs are favored by 9, and the total is 211.5. Don't expect Nikola Mirotic to be back in this one, but expect him to be back either Wednesday or Thursday when the Bulls play. Channing Frye is dealing with a dislocated finger. He should be okay, while Punchbob Shiploak is dealing with a right arm injury. He is questionable. If he is out, expect more minutes for Paul Zipser and perhaps for Chris Felizio, with maybe Markkanen and Lopez getting a bit of a bump there as well. At point guard, you've got Chrissy Dunn at 6,700. Well, it's going to really put to the test the backcourt against the Cavs situation, especially at that price. It is, I don't think I can do it for cash for Dunn. Yeah, he dropped 27 in the last game. That's fine, but it's not $6,700 worth. He's averaging 38 across the last three games, but he's also had a 9-point game in his last five. So he is quite up and down, and I'm not feeling great about him. Jaren Grant, no interest. Jose Calderon, 0. At shooting guard, I like Justin Holiday here. 5,800, the points, the minutes, none of that stuff, the shot attempts, none of that stuff's going to be in doubt. At 5,800, I feel pretty good about Justin in this game. Kyle Korver and the plumber J.R. Smith are both GPP plays only, while Dwayne Wade, I like what Wade's been doing, but at 6,500 with a blowout potential, I don't think that he is a smart play at that price. Much cheaper? Sure, we can definitely look at it. At small forward, the hammer, Denzel Valentine, saw his minutes significantly cut into by David Nwaba in the last game. Whether that continues, I'm not sure, but it makes him a really tough guy to use. He could be a low-owned tournament play, but I don't feel great about it, but he would be a tournament mix player. Well, David Nwaba at 4,200. 26 points in that last one for Nwaba. Really tough to get a full read on how he's going to perform. I don't really love using him here. At power forward, Markkanen at 6,600. I like the upside. So tournament only for me. While Jeff Green and Jay Crowder, not really feeling any interest there. While Kevin Love probably just priced a little bit too high at 8,000 with that blowout potential. I didn't even talk about the main small forward in this game.
LeBron James.
Put him in the Yanni category. $12,000. I think it's too expensive for cash, especially with maybe he plays 31 minutes as they spank the Bulls. I would feel better about, out of the Simmons, Embiid, Giannis group that we've talked about so far, I would feel better about spending that big money on LeBron in cash. But I also think that a more balanced cash lineup is probably going to be the way to go on Monday. Now, Love is one of the centers. The other center we've got there is Robin Lopez at 5,500. Been putting up some consistent numbers, so I don't think that he is a bad cash play. I don't think he is a good tournament play, though. On DraftKings, we've got not a lot happening in terms of overall value in this one. I think that Korver and the Plumber are tournament options. Chrissy Dunn at 6,100 has some appeal, but again, it's just a tournament. Dwayne Wade, more interesting at 5,600. I think that you could almost use Wade in cash at that price, because I think in a blowout, he'll still get that value. I like Justin Holiday for cash, and LeBron at 11,800 falls more into the cash realm as well. All right, let's move on to the next game here. We've got the Golden State Warriors and the New Orleans Pelicans. We know that Sean Livingston is out for the Warriors, and we know that Tone Davis is out for the Pelicans. Now, by the time you're listening to this, you might have an update on Davis's status. The Pelicans, those tricky Pelicans, they know the results of the MRI, but they won't release it until their morning because they're trying to get some sort of... I've got no idea. I don't know. I don't know what they're doing. I don't know if it means that it's bad news. I don't know if it means that it's good news. All I know that it means is this team is just... It's ludicrous. The information that comes out of this medical department consistently is baffling. I don't know why you would withhold the MRI results. Why would you do that? I got no idea. We will see what the issue is with Davis's pelvis. And if it means he's missing extended time, all we know is that he has been ruled out of this game. So we're probably going to have Dante Dunningham as the New Orleans Pelicans game notes lists him as their probable starter. Dante Cunningham, of course, he'll start at power forward and he will do pretty much nothing in that playing time, with more minutes going to guys like Darius Miller, Etuan Moore, a little bit more of Ian Clark, maybe the ghost of Omar Asik gets out there and plays as well. Heaven forbid we see Shek Diallo. Doesn't appear that's going to be the case, but surely at some point we've got to get him in there. At point guard, love Steph here, 9,900 for Curry, really good matchup. That's a 45 pointer almost in the bag, I would guess. Well, Rajon Rondo at 5,700, his two games without Davis have been much improved. So at 5,700, I do really like him here, which is a sentence that I'm not really supposed to say about Rondo. At shooting guard, Etuan Moore, 4,000. I think at 4,000 with Davis out, more usage, he's going to be able to crack that 20-point mark, so I do like him at that price. Clay at 7,000 just doesn't really do much for me. And Drew Holiday at 6,700, almost a 30-point floor, I feel, which is a pretty strong cash option. Pat McCaw at 35. I guess without Livingston, the possibility that Iguodala misses, you could look at McCaw, but you're going to require Steph out for him to really be an impact player. Darius Miller at small forward, 3,700 for Darius. This dude's averaging 18 over the past five. I feel okay about that in cash. A decent matchup, a high pace situation for him. He's going to shoot threes. He's going to get minutes, and that's a decent recipe. Iguodala, no. Kevin Durant, 10-4. Probably more of a tournament play for Durant, I think, than cash at the 10,400 point. As for Cunningham, he's up to 4,500. He had a 25-pointer in the last game. He played just 14 minutes. I don't expect Dante Cunningham to go at close to 2 fantasy points per minute in every game, so that's probably going to price him out of it. At power forward, Draymond's at 8,000, just too high, I believe. Dave West, no. Jordy Bell. Jordy Bell, maybe you could throw into a tournament. We know he's got insane per-minute type production, but it's just not enough to lock him into any sort of cash type situation. Over on DraftKings, let's take a look. Tournaments, Bell at 3,300, and then a bunch of guys that I like for cash. Steph at 94, Drew at 6,300, Rondo at 5,000, Boog at 11,000. Didn't even talk about Boog on FanDuel, probably should go back and do that. Durant at 9,000, Miller at 41, and Moore at 3,700. Boog without Tone Davis is a strong play, but the problem, you just have to worry about Boog against the Warriors, and we know centers against the Warriors are a concern, but you still want to have a look at him. I shouldn't have skipped over him in that analysis. Let's move on to the next one. It is the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Memphis Grizzlies. The Wolves are favored by 2, and the total is 203.5. Chandler Parsons is out, as is Brandon Wright for the Grizzlies. We don't know the status of Bielitsa, who missed today's game. I would have to assume that he won't play, but we don't know that at this point. At point guard, Jeff Teague.
My name is Jeff.
I'm in on him at 6,600. I think that's a pretty decent cash option to use him there. Whereas Mario Chalmers at 4,200, that price is plummeting because his playing time and his production has also plummeted. Shooting guard, Benny McLemore, 3,900. He is starting. He's doing not much, but I think that in a tournament spot, you can have a look at Ben, and he could come out and put up a 30-pointer. It's unlikely, but he could do it. Tyreek at 7,400. I think he had a monster in the last game, 59 points for Tyreek. He was the monstrous line of the night across the weekend. 7,400 for Tyreek, I think, is a good play, and I'd be happy with getting him out there. Wiggo's at 65, and he is more of a tournament guy. At small forward, you got Brooksy. Dylan Brooks, 4,000. No. Butler's at 8,400. A really big game from Butler today, obviously 54 points. 8,400 on a back-to-back against a slow-it-down type Memphis team. I think I'd look at him more of a tournament guy. Just don't have the full trust to lock him in cash. At power forward, Taj is at 5,200. He's the Courtney Lee of big man. Lock him in, get your 25 and go home happy. While Jermichael Green at 49. Big game from Jermichael in his last one where he put up 28, but prior to that, he'd been fairly putrid. So not a lot to really like with him as we move forward. Jarrell Martin getting some extra minutes recently too, but that's not enough for us to care about. Also interesting that FanDuel has increased their minimum price. It was 3,000 earlier in the season, and they've just snuck it back up to 3,500. So that's that in part of that, I guess, more tightly priced situation we're seeing. For centers, Marc Gasol, 8,800. That's very high. He's been playing okay, 52 points in the last one. A lot of minutes for Mark. With no Brandon Wright and Deontay Davis not even playing in the last game, 41 minutes he played. So 8,800, I think he's a tournament guy. And Townsie, love Townsie, but I don't think you can rely upon him in cash. A tough matchup with Gasol, a tough offensive situation for him. I think that I think he's a tournament only type of guy, and I would prefer Gasol over Towns at the moment. Let's go on to the next one. Oh no, let's go to DraftKings, sorry, and talk some tournament options. Tyreek is at 73, Marc Gasol at 81 for tournaments, and Benny Mac at 3,500. And for cash, I love Jim Butler at 6,900 on DraftKings. And Jeff Teague at 6,400, also a strong cash play. Today's episode's an absolute monster. We've got 3 games left. We're going a long time. Hope you guys are still sticking around. The Denver Nuggets and the Dallas Mavericks. The Mavericks are favored by 3, and the total is 208.5 points. Baby Neck Wilson Chandler is questionable with that lower back pain that's kept him out for the last few. Whereas for the Mavericks, Dorian Finney-Smith and Nerlens Noel are both on the injury report. But if they were healthy, I don't even think they'd play anyway. So not really too much for us to be too concerned about. At point guard, Dennis Smith Jr. is down to 5,500. good matchup for Smitty. It's been underwhelming lately, definitely, but I would be okay using him at that 5,500 price point. While the blue arrow, Jamal Murray, put up he put up 43 points against the Lakers at 5,600, good value, but I don't fully feel the trust of using him with his streaky shooting, and he is a tournament type of a guy. At shooting guard, Wes Matthews, 4,800, no confidence in his consistency. Gaz Harris at 65, confident in his consistency, but that price just feels a little bit too high for Gaz.
Nice, Gary!
So I'd probably fade him. JJ Barea is an interesting guy. He's averaging 28 points over his last five and 32 over his last three, and he's at $5,000. So all that would make me go, yeah, bang it in. Lock it in. Love it. I'm just not fully there with Barea to lock him in as a cash play. Love him for tournaments, and I could use him in cash, but it's a level of doubt that I have still. Farton Will Barton, up to 7,300, has been up and down, as is his pretty much his MO. Love it for tournaments, not really a fan for cash at that sort of a price. For small forward, the pencil Harrison Barnes at 7,100, just too high, not keen on that. Well, one show will likely start if Baby Nick is out. He's at 4,000, and he has not really provided us too much. As for Chandler, I don't think I'd go with him even if he played. At power forward, Dirk, 5,200. I feel okay about Dirk in cash. Yeah, get your 25, 26. I feel like that's a good spot for him. While Ken Fareed's at 55. And actually, Fareed played pretty well next to Mason Plumlee in the last game. So 5,500, decent usage, decent minutes. I think 55 is worth a look for Fareed. The other guy we want to pay some attention to is Trey Lyles, who had 25 points in that last game. He's at 4,400. But consistency-wise, I think he's a guy you look at as a tournament-type player. The Mavericks are still starting Maxi Kleber at power forward. He's at 3,600, but hasn't really done enough to make me think that that's an awesome play. At center, I love Mason Plumlee here. 5,800 for Mace. Yeah, 35 point upside. Cash, tournaments, really like Mason Plumlee there. While Salah Mejri at 35, probably going to pass on him. On DraftKings for tournaments, it's Dennis Smith at 56, it's the Blue Arrow at 51, and it's JJ Barea at 46, along with Wes Matthews at 45. And for centers, I cannot stress enough how much I love Mason Plumlee at 4,300. That is super strong pricing. The pencil's at 66, so he is a cash play on DraftKings. He's not really on FanDuel. And Gaz Harris at 58, also a really, really strong price point. Let's go on to the next one. We're talking about the Detroit Pistons and the resting San Antonio Spurs. The Spurs are favored by 3.5, and the total is 198. We should have Gay back. We should have Aldridge back. We should have Parker, Green, Gasol, Ginobili, all these guys back. So anything we saw in that last game, it doesn't really do anything in terms of, you know, informing us of what the Spurs are going to look like in this game. So those guys should all return to action. The guy that won't be there will be Kyle Anderson. I can 100% guarantee you that. At point guard, Reg Jackson, 5,600. Love that price for him, so I would be in on using him despite the negative matchup against the Spurs. With Tone Parker back, that's going to eliminate DeJounte Murray's value, while Pat Mills at 4,200 may be a flyer, but at 42, I don't feel good about it. Dan Green, Avery Bradley. Yeah, look, Bradley, I consider a tournament guy. I don't really feel much for Green, but I'm not strong on Bradley given how much he's struggled this season. Forbesy, Ginobili, Kennard, Brandon Paul. Brandon Paul, I think you might see him start for Kyle Anderson. And at 3,500, he had 23 points today. He would be a GPP option, but it is, as I said, an 11-game slate. So you can probably find better options. But finding that cheap guy, Brandon Paul might be the player. At small forward, Rudy Gay at 4,800. I don't have full confidence in that, but I do like it for tournaments. There is 30-point upside there pretty clearly for Gay, while Stan Johnson at 38, just not a point accumulator at all. At power forward, Aldridge, 8,400. Back on him, 40 points. It should beckon here, so I do like that. While Toby Harris at 64, I think he is not a bad cash play as well. Tone Tolliver, Davis Bertans, Eric Morland. No. At center, Powell's at 6,300. In a tournament, but I don't feel good about Powell on a back-to-back, even though he only played the first half. If this one gets anywhere close to being out of hand in either way, he'll get pulled because the Spurs do have some more, a three-game in four-night stretch coming up pretty soon, and he'll be the recipient of that rest. Andre Drummond's at 9,600. That is too high for me against the Spurs team. That can be quite damaging to centers. Although this season, big men have put up some decent numbers against the Spurs, and Drummond has been killing it. I just think 9,600 is probably just a little bit too high for Drummond. On to DraftKings for tournaments. It's Reggie Jackson at 59, Pat Mills at 39, and Pau Gasol at 55. And for cash, I like LaMarcus at 8,300. Now, Drummond comes in at 8,800, which you could actually use that in cash. I just don't feel super strongly about it. We did it. We're here to the last game of the night now, guys. It is the Washington Wizards and the Utah Jazz. Rudy Gobert is questionable for this game. Rocket Rodney Hood is also questionable. Raul Neto is probable. The return of Gobert makes this one, or the potential return of Gobert makes this one quite a tough one to judge. If Gobert comes back, how many minutes does he play? What happens to Favors? Does Jonas Jerebko stay in the rotation? What happens to Epe Udo, Thabo Sefolosha? How does all their minutes play out? So there is a lot of unknown questions with this game, and it is going to make it tough to rely upon many guys for cash. But in saying that, ravishing Rick Rubio is at 5,300. I know he's stunk a lot, but I really do like him at 5,300. I feel pretty good about him getting at least 25 points. On the Wizards side of things, Timmy Frazier continues to start. Had actually a good game in the last one. I wouldn't want to use him for DFS. Tomas Satoransky has been killing it, but he's now up to 4,800, which does take away a lot of the value of Satoransky. At shooting guard, Bradles Beal, 7,600. I'm back in on using him. While Don Mitchell's at 7,500. We all love what Don's doing, but at that price, I think you have to relish or relinquish him or relegate him to a tournament-only play at that price. Rocket Rodney Hood at 5,800. If he was ready to go, I'd definitely be in on that. Even for cash, I'd be in on that price. At Alec Burks, the other guy here, 4,800. If Rocket's out, Burks, he's been killing it. At 4,800, the price is fairly high. But I would be okay looking at him even for cash at 4,800 if Rocket is out. At small forward, Oubre's at 4,900. Cannot trust him in cash, but you can look at him in tournaments. Jingling Joe's at 55. That's too high. Otto Porter at 72. Love that. Cash for him. With Johnny Wall out. At power forward, let's look at Markeith, who was big in the last game. He's at 5,000. I'm not ready to trust him for cash options. Tournament, yeah, the upside's there, but no, I don't feel great about that. Well, Derek Favors now at 7,600. The return of Gobert is going to impact his output. So, yeah, I really can't see why you would get behind using him. Jonas Jerebko could also find himself out of the rotation. And at center, Marcin Gortat, 4,700. Well, he could come in and face off against Gobert, and that would be absolutely shitful for him. So I think we would end up fading him along with Mahinmi, and we're not going to use Gobert in his first game back, even though he is at 8,800. That's just too high of a price to pay. Over on DraftKings, some tournament options. Satoransky at 41, a much more palatable price. Kelly Oubre at 51 and Don Mitchell at 69. And for cash, Bradles Beal, 74 and Otto Porter at a very, very sexy 6,600. On Yahoo, let's go through some options. Four tournaments, Boog Cousins, Mark Gasol. We've got the Blue Swimmer, the Blue Arrow, Jay Crowder, Juancho Hernangomez, Tyler Ulis, Marquise Chris. I don't even know why I put that in there, but he's a minimum salary, minimum on Yahoo. So that gives me maybe in a tournament. Bembry, Nwaba, Jordy Bell. And that wraps it up for the cash play. So for the tournament plays, for cash, I like Satoransky on Yahoo. I like Ballinelli. I like Jarrett Jack, Darius Miller, Dirk Nowitzki, Etuan Moore, Ken Fareed, Ersan, the Muppet, John Henson, John Simmons, Mick Beasley, Mason Plumlee, Enes Kanter, Chrissy Dunn, Benny Simmons, and Joel Embiid. For Moneyball and tournaments, we've got the Don Mitchell, Nick Batum, Farton Will Barton, Bob Cove, Mike Beasley, JJ Redick, the Blue Arrow, Etuan Moore, and I think that wraps it up for the tournament picks. For cash, we have got Darius Miller, Ken Fareed, Ersan, John Simmons, Gaz Harris, Mason Plumlee, Chrissy Middleton, The Pencil, Dennis Schroeder, Kemba Walker, Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, and Boog Cousins. And on Draft Stars, for tournaments, we go with Lord Alfred, Nick Batum, Rondé Hollis-Jefferson, Jaylen Brown, the Blue Arrow, the artist formerly known as Torian Prince, Etuan Moore, Juancho Hernangomez, and for cash, we've got Ken Fareed, Darius Miller, the Muppet, Ersan Ilyasova, John Simmons, Michael Beasley, Mason Plumlee, TJ Warren, Spencer Dinwiddie, the Pencil, Lauri Markkanen, Dwight Howard, Dennis Schroeder, Kemba Walker, Steph, KD, Joel, and Boog Cousins. Big podcast today, guys. So if you did enjoy it, I'd be really appreciative if you could go and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. If you are watching on YouTube, subscribe, click the little bell for notifications, give it a thumbs up and leave a comment. And you can also find the podcast on Google Play, on TuneIn, on Stitcher, and on Spotify, and check out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network and our sponsor. Go to blueapron.com/LOFB for your first meal free and check out great home cooked food. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Enes Kanter.